This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for an exploration of two Episcopal parishes, where we'll find that the rector at each church shares consistent philosophies predicated on compassion and engagement. We'll first stop in and visit with Christopher Bohe. He's the rector at St. Peter's Episcopal Church in Columbia, Tennessee. Bohe's church dates from 1860, but his parish also stewards the antebellum St. John's Episcopal Church in nearby Ashwood, Maury County, Tennessee. We met with Bohe at the circa 1830s antebellum church, St. John's. During the Civil War, the church served as a Confederate hospital and remains today as a historical site. Even though it ceased to function as an active parish back in 1900, St. John's still offers special services and events throughout the year. Next up is a visit with Sid Symington, the rector at St. Peter's-by-the-Sea Episcopal Church in Morro Bay, California. It's my hometown, where we'll learn how Symington is stewarding and engaging his flock.
My name is Chris Bowie. I'm the rector at St. Peter's Episcopal Church in Columbia, Tennessee.
Wow, and you have a legacy to uphold
here. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it goes way back, doesn't it?
It does. This building, first construction began in 1839, completed in 1842. Mm-hmm. Right now, St. Peter's, the church where I serve, has a custodial relationship. We have a stewardship of this place to maintain it and pass it forward to future generations. And our purpose is to not change a single thing on the inside of the historic structure.
So how about acoustics?
Stunning. There is no speaker, none needed, no electricity, none needed, no running water.
Wow.
Air conditioning is through the open windows.
So acoustics work.
Stunningly. Well, because that all bounces off the ceiling. When you hear, I'm getting chills right now, when the choir will begin to sing a cappella, or when we've had the children's choir, not a dry eye in the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
So right now, as we're talking, we're coming out of the other end of COVID world, right?
Right, right.
So you're able to have in-person services now?
We have been having them on and off. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the hokey pokey,
yeah.
Right? You start
depends
and then stop.
The week, yeah.
That's right. And, you know, respond to the numbers, be cautious and careful. We did make the decision to relax all of our protocols on Easter Sunday because of the numbers of cases in the hospital had dropped so low. At the same time, you know, we don't shame people who want to wear masks, and we make it accessible to those who want to continue to be as safe as they can. And
right.
that's completely understandable.
Let's talk about the bigger picture of the church today. We'll start with Episcopal and your world. Your membership in baptisms and whatnot have been growing markedly in the last year, right?
During the time of COVID, we actually increased our membership. Part of that, I think, is technologically. We've been live streaming and the radio broadcast that we've been doing. People have had a chance to be exposed to our style and to our message. At the same time, there is such a rediscovered yearning for that dimension of transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about a sense of community. And
that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Key to me, the attraction would be sense of community.
It is. It is.
Fellowship.
Here's the thing. Community is essential, but if that's your message, it's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start with people are broken.
Interesting.
So that they start with a sense of how lonesome they are or unconnected they are. Then you can focus on healing and community.
Yep. But once you get them in the fold, they are an active, live, healthy part of the church community.
Yes, as long as the church itself makes them feel valued, mm-hmm. that we want to hear their story, we want to see where God might be wrapping their story into the ongoing story of St. Peter's. Everyone who comes through that door is a gift. And sometimes we have to work a little hard to find out what the nature of that gift is, mm-hmm. but people are the resources that God moves through.
Isn't that interesting, the positives out of a negative?
Well, right. I mean, and isn't that a gospel message? Out of death comes resurrection. Out of brokenness comes healing. We are now emerging, I think, into a healthy new chapter.
Let's go beyond St. Peter's. Let's go to the larger mainline Episcopal Church in America, which in areas around the country has had a hard time surviving. I likened it almost a dying church at times, where the membership was 60, 70, and 80 and above.
Right.
And it seemed like there was a gap in recruiting and reaching out to young people.
Right.
How have you reacted to that?
Well, it is true that a lot of the Episcopal churches seeming to be on a fade, that the average congregation these days is at the average Sunday attendance of 75 people on a worship service. And that's also across pretty much all the mainline Protestant traditions. I think the failure, and I thank God for the people who come whatever age, and especially the seniors. I joke that they're kind of cramming for the final. Mm-hmm. They're getting ready for the next chapter. The key, however, I think, in bringing folks with different experiences is, again, to identify a crucial yearning and hunger for hope, for meaning, to talk about God's radical, unconditional, one-way love. That message will never be irrelevant.
Have you envisioning any programs, any activities, music?
Well, the thing about St. Peter's is it is an historic church. Mm-hmm. The building was put up in 1861. It was organized in 1828. So there's a strong sense of history. Having said that, what's valuable to me as a Californian who, you know, therefore kind of a lotus eater, we tend to forget our history on the West Coast, that there is that sense of cultural memory that I was always raised to believe and to teach that the prayer book is the most essential document that builds community. I've come to understand that it's, in fact, the church calendar, the times when we get together for picnics like at this church or for pig roasts, which I didn't even know there was such a thing. The church is where we find a relationship with God, but it's outside the doors that we build the relationships with one another. And that's what people are looking for.
Yeah. And that's what we were talking to at the beginning, talking about off Sunday service is almost besides the point in some respects in the whole picture of being a member of the community.
That's right. The fact is, you know, that is especially true in areas other than the Southeast. And there's just no denying that the South is the Flannery O'Connor said, God haunted. And so there is a sense of continuing that tradition. But you're right. It takes a lot of empathy and creativity to understand where people are so that you can find different ways to lead them to that message of grace and forgiveness.
And in which ways, in your mind anyway, are you visualizing an ongoing living church throughout the weekdays?
Wow, what a huge question. You know, I can't claim to be any kind of genius on this.
You must have some ideas.
Well, I think
that big barbecue.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, programs are good. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. And systematic teaching methods are good. And you know, all these programs are good. But that will only get a person so far.
Right.
You know, it's like if you teach a person how to pray or how to read scripture or do the other Christian habits, that will help bring sanity to their life, but it will not bring them lasting peace. That only comes through this recognition, and it sounds like a bummer, but a recognition of our total and complete need for God, and the good news is He is there for us.
But you are the steward and the shepherd.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate?
What I do first is just ask for your story. Ask about where you've come from. If I want to be cute, I can ask about, you know, what's your youngest, earliest memory of church? What has your experience of it been? Anytime you ask someone what they think about God, they're really showing you what they think about themselves. And when, inevitably, if there is a person who perhaps is reluctant or resistant, inevitably there has been some sort of wound or trauma that needs to be addressed and released. It's like a cat and a hairball. It just needs to get out.
Yep, yep.
And that's when the real conversation can begin.
So that's that cathartic process.
Exactly. And that's what I find so meaningful about this style of traditional worship is that the music and the liturgy and hopefully the message bring about this abreactive moment where the person in the pew feels a deep generating surge of energy and release. And that gives us the grace to carry on with the rest of the week, which is for most people really, really hard.
Going forward, you're opening up. Hopefully we're entering post-COVID.
Yes.
What's your vision for the church and church services.
And we, in fact, by grace and because of the good trends in our county, we've been able to have weekly services, sometimes with more protocols and restrictions than others. But we are, yes, we're back fully to how we're operating. The vision for the future, I used to think I didn't have the vision thing, right? And I was talking to someone, I was relating a memory I had, this is probably sharing too much, that when I was 6 years old, I would go outside our house and I would sit on the grass and I brought with me all of my stuffed animals. And we would just go out there and hang out. And that's when my friend said, well, that's your vision, that sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. And I think that's right.
That's really cool. So you had a parish at a young age.
I'm sorry?
You had a parish.
Exactly. They didn't pay much, but, you know.
Loyal following.
And they didn't criticize. Yeah. It was pretty great. It was, you know, unconditional love.
Very cool.
My name is Chris Bowie. I'm the rector at St. Peter's Episcopal Church in Columbia, Tennessee. Our website is stpeterscolumbia.org. That's all spelled out, stpeterscolumbia.org.
And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tennessee. We'll see you here. Join me as we visit with Sid Simonton. He's the rector at St. Peter's by the Sea in Morro Bay Episcopal Church. Hi, Sid.
Hello, Tom. Good to see you. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah. Well, you know where I just was.
Yeah, up over the hill.
In Tennessee, rural Tennessee. We were talking with the rector in Tennessee at the other St. Peter. So as you know, the rector in Tennessee and I were talking about the state of the state of the Episcopal Church,
yeah,
and more specifically individual parishes and how we're evolving or devolving and where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts that come to mind for you?
Ours is a small parish. It has been bigger in the past, and like many, I would say most, the numbers are not increasing. Maybe they're decreasing a little bit, but it's a solid group, and they love each other. They want to stay together and keep things rolling. A lot of them are older, but it's really a place where we continue to pray. Even if there's only two of us, we pray for the health and love in the greater community. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, in a spiritual sense, it doesn't matter how big or little we are.
Right. But in defense, the last year you've been more defensive rather than proactive.
Yeah. We kept things rolling by having an online presence, a service that we put out every week, streaming on Facebook. And then at times when we thought it was safe enough, we had services outside, which was pretty interesting for Episcopalians. Episcopalians don't tend to be too demonstrative. And so people singing hymns and sort of looking over their shoulder, is this okay? Mm-hmm. Yep, it was okay, and we did fine.
Going forward, I know you've meditated on this, is how do you grow the church and mm-hmm. keep it dynamic and vital and healthy? And you alluded to high milers as your parishioners.
Yeah.
And so how do you reach out to the young people, the 20-somethings, even the university students?
There is no formula for it.
Do you have any ideas? And have you?
Well, the way people talk about we've got to grow the church is a strange way, to my mind, a false conversation. The only way to grow it is by keeping it healthy and vibrant, regardless of its size, and being extraordinarily welcoming when people do come. It's interesting you should say, because we put some ads in the paper to say we're open again, and this parish has never advertised that I know of, but we decided, what the heck, let's do a fling. But the ads were, all your critters are welcome, and everybody is welcome here, and we're laid back, and what we exist for is just to create a space where it's safe to be loving and talk about that subject, which is not a subject that you'll see anywhere else in American life.
But the church itself has evolved and is evolving in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, Sunday service, Easter, Christmas,
yeah,
traditional, and then you went about your life during the weekdays. That's changed. And granted, you're coming out of a reset, but you were smart enough to start a theater group.
Yeah.
That is here. So in a sense, like in San Ynez Valley, and when I met with the Episcopal people in Salem, Virginia, the church is no longer about Sunday service limited. It's about throughout the week.
Very, very true. In fact, the numbers, the famously dwindling numbers of mainline denominations, I don't think what's taken into account is that point that you bring up, and that is that our average attendance is pretty stable, but it's not always the same people week in and week out. And somebody can be a devout and dedicated and creative and energetic participant here, but not have time to come every week or have too many things going on. They travel to see their kids or they want to go camping or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so they're only here every other week or even every third week. But it doesn't make them any less of a devoted follower of the Christian method of looking at life. And so, getting used to that is really important for somebody who's running a church and not saying, where the heck right. are these people? Get your buns into the seat or you're not a member of this parish. We don't do that anymore.
So no longer demerits and
no.
negative points for
nobody
not
gets attendance.
Yeah.
Interesting, in terms of attendance, the other side of that coin is there was a debate in our diocesan convention a couple years ago now about someone brought up, how are we going to determine whether someone's been baptized before we give them communion? Mm-hmm. And thank goodness there were enough of us who immediately howled at such an idea, because what we know is that, and at a close examination of the whole origin of the Eucharist, is that's the last thing you wanted to do, is determine anything about anybody before you include them in your community. It's the other way around.
Right.
Include them, and then we'll talk about, you know, where they're coming and where they're going, coming from and where they're going. And that's different. In the old days, when everybody had a church, everybody had an answer to what church do you go to. Mm-hmm. You know, it was okay to have strictures and rules of engagement, but nowadays we're actually closer, I think, to what Jesus had in mind, and that is everybody is engaged, everybody's welcome, and then we can talk about what to do with that welcome.
Right. In the church here, if somebody shows up Sunday Eucharist, you don't vet them. There's
oh, no.
nothing.
How? There was a level of absurdity to the concept in the first place. What are we supposed to do, card them? You know, let me see your papers? No, that's not going to happen. And it shouldn't happen. There shouldn't be a way of determining who somebody is before you share this core story that's the basic love story.
Going forward, once again, in your mind, just grabbing at ideas, how best would you like to grow the church and grow the parishioners' base?
The only way that I know of is by being welcoming and by continuing to have the conversation about what can we do to show that we care about the people. So in the wider community, there's a model that shows like cores, growing circles of influence, and the very center is people, including me, who are here every week, absolutely, religiously, in the literal sense. But then there's a group outside that might include those people who are 2 or 3 weeks, but are very much involved. Then there's a group outside of that says, that's my church, but you never see them, or you see them Christmas and Easter only, the C&E folks, we call them. And then there's a wider community of people who walk by and say, I'm glad that church is there, you know, who may never show up. But they'll come to the theater, or they'll come to the, you know, people with MS exercise program that's in the parking lot on Thursday afternoons. All these various things that feed the community. So I don't know about growing the numbers of the church. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about that formula-wise.
Well, to me, it's not formulaic, but it's along the lines of your theater group. It's coming up with different community-based events that happen here that by default become a showpiece.
And they know, hopefully they know, and we have to find new ways of telling them all the time, whoever observes us, that we think that the only reason we're here, our only point, is to have a community where our product, our interest, our conversation, our whole outlook is how to get better at neighbor love, mm-hmm. including examination, re-examination of scriptures. And rule one, you know, it's about neighbor love. Rule two is if anything seems like it's not about neighbor love, reread rule one and figure out how it applies. And that's not a traditional way of doing scripture either.
When we lived over in the San Joaquin Valley years ago, the rector in a church in Turlock, he created a Tazay service.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Yes, it is. Beautiful.
Have you thought of doing that here?
We've done it some. Maybe it's a good idea to rethink it.
And explain to Zay.
Yeah, in our post-COVID world, maybe it's something that would strike a chord with people. When I first got here 8.5 years ago, that was one of the first things I did. Taizé is a community in France, and they're monks. They're also famous for writing music, and it's very meditative chant music that's quite accessible to anyone. Easy to sing and easy to remember. It's usually a phrase that's repeated over and over again. And the beauty of the meditativeness is such that pilgrims flock from all over to visit Taizé, and they publish songbooks from it. And as a rule, we only use it a few times a year for special services around Holy Week and things like that. But you've given me a good idea. I think it may be time to revisit Taizé.
That'd be really cool. And it's an example of something, in my opinion, has to take place within the church itself, within the building.
Yeah.
Because of the acoustics.
Yeah, the acoustics in here are beautiful. And is there something about having it's like a petri dish or a lab or a pod. We talk a lot about pods during COVID, but this is a pod of people who are praying for the world. And even if there's only two of us, we're healthy. And so it's very much in the Benedictine tradition, that idea of no matter what's going on in the world, there are people here every Sunday who are praying for the health and the spiritual well-being of the world, no matter what's going on. And so it's defiant of a lot of things in our culture, which is why it's shrinking, because the cultural elements are so powerful and so overwhelming. Media stuff is so overwhelming, advertising, marketing, that it's a real battle, in a sense, that's engaged here, because all we're doing is praying for you. And that nobody's making any money off us. It's not flashy or anything. Sad to say, especially in California, notorious for being the least churched place in the country.
But there are those pockets up in Big Sur, the new Commodities.
Oh, yeah.
Hermitage, I've been there, and those dudes, those monks, 24/7 every day are praying for you and me.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
That's what they do. And, yeah. And that is what we do here. Our conversations are about how can we tell and retell the stories that we find in the Bible to focus more on neighbor love and to really be honest about the imagery that has driven our culture, so much of which is violence. You don't dismiss the Old Testament. You dismiss the idea that the only way to talk about life is through violent imagery and make it about self-examination as opposed to who shall I beat up on this week.
Okay, parting thoughts?
It's a privilege to be part of this lively community, and the smallness of it never really strikes me. You know, when I was 6, I would make the family get down in the basement, and I'd give church there. And it's something I've always wanted to do, and the numbers don't matter so much as the fact that it's real live storytelling, and it's got that ineffable goal in mind that says love is actually doable, valuable, and will win someday.
I love it. Sid Simonton, rector at St. Peter's by the Sea, Morro Bay, California. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to know you.
You too. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolfe, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust preservation initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.